This is John Cargo from the town of Caro, New York. I'm the president of the Caro Historical Society, and you're listening to WTXC Acura 90.7 FM Hands-On Radio.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, October 4th. We are 75.8% of the way through the year. We got 78 days left until winter. And today we will see a small break in the rain this morning as different fronts move through the area. A high of 62 is expected around noon, and around that time a cold front will move through, dropping more rain. Overnight, the rain will continue as temperatures drop to 54 degrees. Tuesday, we could have some lingering rain, and a high of 63 is expected at 2 p.m. Tuesday night will be in the mid-50s. Wednesday will be dry with a high of 67, and Thursday also looks dry with a high of 74. Pollen levels for today will be low. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 1:40 a.m., low tide at 8:30 a.m., high tide again at 2:17 p.m., and low tide again at 8:40 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 64 degrees. Sunset today will be at 6:20 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:51 a.m. All of those times and conditions are only for Greene and Columbia County. Looking way up, we see a pretty quiet planetary neighborhood. Solar wind speed is currently 348 kilometers per second at 2.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 38. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Ginger Radio Hour, and I'm Justin Maiman. You are listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM. I'm live from the WGXC Acre studio. It's another beautiful day in the Catskills. Over the next hour, you'll hear a collection of inspirations. Music, lots of music. My conversation with naturalist and writer Leslie Sharp, high atop a mountain in the great western Catskills, and we just may have time to take a walk together. But let's get this started with Bill Callahan. This is how, on my best days, I sound in my head.
Too many birds in one tree. Too too many birds in one tree. And the sky is full of black and screaming leaves. The sky is full of black and screaming. And one more bird, then one more bird, and one last bird, and another, one last blackbird without a place to land, one last blackbird without a place to be, turns around in hopes to find the place it last knew rest. Oh, blackbird, over black rain burn. This is not where you last knew rest. You fly all night to sleep on stone, the heartless rest that in the morn will be gone. You fly all night to sleep on stone, to return to the tree with too many birds, too many birds, too many birds.
The song Too Many Birds from the 2009 album Sometimes I Wish We Were an Eagle. It's impossible for me to not sing along to that song. I'll spare you that today, but you never know. We're building towards a theme here. Up next, Florist and the soothing voice of Emily Sprague. Here's her song, Glowing Brightly.
The window always shows me where.
She jumped in too early. That happens. But let's try that again. Here we go. Florist. Glowing Brightly by Florist. The band calls itself, quote, a friendship project that was born in the Catskill Mountains. Pretty cool. The song is from the 2017 album If Blue Could Be Happiness. Again, that was Florist. Coming up, naturalist Leslie Sharp looks out her cabin window and tells me what's going on. We talk bears, bobcats, and more. First, some more music. You are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
same height as you and goes to same record stores. I literally think I am 5 minutes away from
was Features Creatures by Björk off her 2017 album Utopia. You see what I'm doing here? I'm still building to a theme. Creatures, Catskills, blue, birds. All the music so far leads to this. I first read Leslie Sharp's book The Quarry Fox and Other Critters of the Wild Catskills in 2019. Leslie and her book helped to remind me of the natural world's ability to amaze. It even prompted, because this is how the world works, a red fox to emerge from the woods along 23 and stare deeply into my soul. Or at least that's what I imagined it was doing. The Quarry Fox is now available as an audiobook, and I had the pleasure of rereading it by simply listening to Leslie tell her story aloud. She is the former vice president of the New York City Audubon Society. She's also been named one of 50 stewards of the Catskills by the Catskill Center for Conservation and Development. Leslie calls that her greatest honor. We talked a few weeks ago, and I'd like to play you an excerpt from our conversation. We talked for over an hour. I'm going to play you a much shorter clip here. I asked Leslie to read aloud from her book a section in which she encounters a bear and her cubs outside her cabin. So, here's the wonderful naturalist and writer, Leslie Sharp.
Several days after first sighting the mother bear with her cubs, I was deadheading the cascading petunia, my favorite flower, its deep purple bloom so fragrant, which filled the flower box of the small wooden shed. That's when I heard it again, that insistent, insinuating sound. Huff, huff, huff. When I looked up, the bear was there, as I had seen her the other day, standing on all fours, where the forest meets the clearing. With her were her twins, and both cubs were standing up, looking straight at me, the family now no more than 50 feet away. I wanted to look at the three of them forever. I could not believe that they were there, so close. The little one, standing, trying to get a better look at me, didn't come up to their mother's shoulder, but they, like their mother, were so curious. Seeing the mother bear, remembering her as a youngster, now with her own brood, I felt such a sense of protectiveness. A ferocity and urgency arose in me. Perhaps it was my own maternal instincts. I had known this bear since she herself was a yearling, forced into adulthood by the mandate of her mother's estrus. She had managed to make this mountain we shared her own and had given me the rare gift of a sense of connection with a truly wild creature. The bear was, in bear terms, a relatively mild, even fearful critter, running readily when I surprised her, shouting from my window, and now, as she had before, huffing to show her anxiety, her own agitation, but not clacking her teeth at me or false charging me, which black bears certainly, with young, can do when they feel threatened. She seemed, frankly, flummoxed. This time, instead of shouting, I spoke. I spoke loudly, but calmly. I did not wave my arms at the little family or my river hat. I stood still and said, "Bear, turn around and go. Take your babies back into the woods. Hide from me. Hide from anything that looks like me. If you ever, ever see me again, run." The bear watched me in silence, listening carefully, or so it seemed. Then, after a moment, she turned around and hurried back into the woods, her obedient cubs gambling after her. I stood there for some time, not moving. It was uncanny. Had she understood? Of course not. What was I thinking? But in that moment, the bear and I out in the open, sharing the same ground, without either of us showing aggression or hostility, it was as if she'd heard me, as if we had communicated. There.
Thank you so much for sharing. It's so beautiful, but it's so sad.
That she has to run away from me or be killed?
That, but also that you have to really, I don't know, I think a lot about these relationships that I think I have with wild animals that I see often. And I do think on some terms we have a relationship, even if it's just that they recognize me and I recognize them. But the first
And they know that you're not going to hurt them, but we as humans who have been identified as neutral, if not benign presences, have to be really resist the temptation to pet them metaphorically, because it's with the quarry fox in my book. You know, the quarry fox got too used to people. The farmer's grandson was hand-feeding him. He wandered into the backyard of another farmer who saw a fox during the day and thought, not wrongly, that this animal was rabid and shot him to death. And here we have a hunting season. We have large animal, the early bear hunting season is going on now, and we have bear hunting, and we're going to have, you know, deer hunting. And any critter that's on this mountain, I have a lot, and I swear they know they hang out here during hunting season because they're safe. You know, they are safe. You know, but that said, it's most of the time the interactions, so many interactions between animals, wild animals, and humans ends badly for the wild animal. Now, that's not all the time, obviously. And we do many good things, specifically my bluebird boxes. We had two wonderful broods of bluebirds that fledged. And I have fought tooth and nail, you know, to do my part to help increasing that population, and have succeeded. But I think people, you know, that little fawn, which are very sweet-tempered and very trusting and that will come up to you, you can't let them do that because they'll do that to the wrong person and the wrong person will shoot them. So it's best to love and honor them, you know, at a distance. Listen, I don't always follow my own advice. I have a new fox and family that is now living in my near woods. I have gray fox, which is really quite extraordinary because they're kind of a deep woods fox. John Burroughs never even saw them in these hills, but I've heard several people have them too, and they're an amazing critter as opposed to the red fox that actually climbs trees because of the way its paws are constructed. And, you know, that guy comes, and I do put out still some seed and some peanuts for the birds, and he has a little feast, and he knows me. But, you know, I will not, you know, when he sees me, I go in. I don't want him to wander into the wrong backyard, as it were. But he has been with me since the March of the pandemic. He's been my pandemic buddy, really, that gray fox. And much to my amazement, he brought Mrs. Fox. She was smaller and slighter and much more skittish. And then, much to my incredible amazement, I looked out, and I saw him with his mini-me. I saw him with this beautiful little fox kit. So, you know, they're in our woods, and they're protected. And believe me, it's like you want to run out and pet them. But, you know, you just have to try to not just respect, but it's really protect the animal from ourselves. Because here in the Catskills, people hunt. You know, and if they see a fox, as we know from the poor quarry fox, you know, who's a little too friendly and a little too out there during the day, the critter will get killed. So that's it. But if you have relationships with, well, they do know you, and they know they trust you. They sense that. That's why I have so many animals back here. You know, they sense that they are safe, and they are safe. But the way that to keep them safe is not to get too intimate with them. They're not my cats, you know. That's well, just all I'm saying.
I think that's
and
great
it's
advice.
Not really sad. It's just, hey, it's life.
Of course. And I think it, and it's common sense. And I think I really like the description you have in the quarry fox defining a naturalist. And I'm just going to read. I'm going to quote you here for a moment. You say a naturalist is, quote, a very powerful and deeply felt connection to the natural world, as well as an appreciation of its beauty and a sense of commonality with its creatures. And I think everything you just spoke about there defines that. I mean, I love the way that you describe yourself as a naturalist, and the way that you describe your property and the woods around your cabin. Actually, sometimes I think, so when I first read your book, sorry, this is going to transition into a question. When I first read your book, you did such a wonderful job of describing the meadow and the forest and the cut and the pond, all the things outside your cabin window. And when I've just recently listened to the audiobook version, that same landscape
repopulated into my brain as I listened to you. And it was really fantastic. And so one of the things I wanted to ask you today is, what are you seeing outside your window today?
Well, let's see. I'm standing at the living room window, and I'm starting to see clouds moving in. We're going to get thunderstorms later. And I'm beginning, now that we're in September and it's still mild, I'm just starting to see that slight brush of autumn on the trees, that very subtle, soft change in color that's beginning. And really might not be that vivid this year because it's been so wet. Last year was a spectacular fall. At least we had that during the pandemic. But it's been so wet. The wetter the summer, the less sharp the colors, so I'm not quite sure how it's going to turn out. What I am watching for, since you're asking, outside of my window, are my hummingbirds. Have they left? The males go first, as the males arrive first, and then the girls and the adolescents. And I had one hummer. The 14th was the last time I think I saw my hummers, my little girls. And then I saw yesterday morning another female showed up, but I had a feeling she was coming through from north. So even though my hummers are gone, I think they're gone. I haven't seen any. I've been standing here looking, you know, it's like both Thoreau and Burroughs talked about, well, people can call naturalists lazy because all we do is, well, if we're not hiking, all we do is just stand and look. I mean, it's about seeing, not just looking, it's about seeing. And that's how you study these creatures and you learn about them. But I've been watching for signs. I see no hummers. I think she might have gone. However, for those of you who have hummingbird feeders, and I know a lot of you do out there, I tend to keep mine up till October 1st because there are going to be hummingbirds coming from the Adirondacks and other points north that are going to come through us on their way south. And I think the hummingbirds, which, think about this, they weigh basically less than an ounce. They weigh less than a penny, if you can imagine. And these little guys who somehow got up here are now going to take off and, among other things, are going to go to Central America and are going to fly 22 hours straight over the Gulf of Mexico. You know, it's really like a miracle. And the other critter that I'm looking for, and I have seen, are, of course, monarch butterflies, which we know are besieged for lots of reasons, habitat loss, pesticides, and also the, loss of milkweed. But there have been some positive signs for it. People are really planting milkweed. And just an FYI for everybody, make sure you get native milkweed. Do not get Japanese milkweed. They do not process it, and they don't really survive on that. They just need that native milkweed. But I have my lower meadow is practically going over to milkweed, which I'm doing on purpose. And it's not just monarchs, it's other butterflies, it's bees. And in the summer, the milkweed flower is so fragrant. You know, you stand in that meadow and it's like, oh my heavens, this is the fragrance of heaven. And the hummingbirds come too, because then the insects are attracted to it. So it's a whole ecosystem around the milkweed. So I am standing and I'm looking out at my milkweed, which is starting to get pods, and they're going to split and they're going to send out more. And aside from what they do for our natural ecosystem and our critters, as a child, there were two things as a small child that I remember that I loved about nature. One, of course, was fireflies, lightning bugs. And they have their own issues, you know, that have to do with pesticides and stuff like that. But the other was in fall when the milkweed would come up and we would all run out and get the pods and split them. And there is no softer silk in the whole world than those strands of milkweed silk. So those are the two things that I'm looking for right now are the migrations, especially checking all my hummingbirds to see what's going on with them and writing down the last time. And I just went into another room, and I have two turkeys now out back. And I think they're probably, two Jakes, young Toms. And they tend to, after the mating season, they'll sort of, the boys will hang out and the girls will hang out with the babies. And then, of course, fall comes and they'll join together again in big flocks. But the I always have two, like the two amigos or the three amigos, these male Toms, Jakes, young Toms are called Jakes. And they kind of come and hang out together, and it's very funny. And I love the turkeys. I think Ben Franklin was right. They should have been our national bird as opposed to the bald eagle. I'm for that. They are an American original, and they are, as he said, a fierce and protective creature as opposed to the bald eagle, which is a scavenger. But that's what I'm looking at today. I'm looking at the hummers, the monarchs, and right now I'm eyeballing the turkeys out the window. The thing about the Catskills is the sky. It's always changing. And looking out and seeing these colors, these soft little brushstrokes starting in the hills, you know, in the fall and in the spring, it's like living in an impressionist painting here. That's what I always feel. And that's starting again, that the fall impressionist painting is beginning.
Sometimes I feel like when I imagine your cabin, that it's almost like the animals of and the birds and the insects of the Catskills may have built an aquarium to put a human in to observe instead of the other way around.
That's what, you know, Justin, I love that. That is the best way to think of my life here. That yes, the animals and the birds have built an aquarium and they put me in it. Now that we're getting towards, you know, pumpkin season, this is another tip for your listeners. I cannot tell you how many pumpkins I get, and I put them at the foot of the drive. I put them all over my rocks. I put them on the steps, and the grapes, I mean, I have so many pumpkins you can't imagine. I lose track. The farmers love me because I go buy all their pumpkins. I have like a Subaru back full of pumpkins. But the thing about it is it's not just for decoration, which is why I love them, of course. Animals love pumpkins as much as we love pumpkins. So at the end of the season, I'll put everything in the woods, and in a week or two, it'll be gone. You know, every critter from, like, you know, the raccoon, you know, to the mice with the seeds and the birds with the seeds. But the funniest thing is this. The critter that most love pumpkins, your black bear. And I really realized this. I had all these pumpkins on my front deck. And I said, oh gosh, you know, it's getting late in the season. It's after Halloween. Let me go put them into the cut, into the woods. And I went out on the front deck on the steps. They were all gone. I said, what? I mean, I felt a little freaked out. Like, who the hell is up here stealing my pumpkins? And then I realized, because there were two pumpkins that hadn't been touched in the highest step. And I realized that the bear had done it. But the funniest thing about the bear is, if the pumpkin gets soggy, if the bottom gets a little soft, they won't touch it. They want a nice, firm, fresh pumpkin. But if any of you have pumpkins, even in jack-o'-lantern form, put them outside at the end of the season. Don't throw them out. Put them outside. I mean, farmers will feed pumpkins to pigs and other farm animals, too. They love it. Everybody loves pumpkin. And the wild animals, it's a huge sustainer for them going into autumn and into fall, and with winter coming when they're trying to pack on the pounds for winter. That includes everyone, from deer to bear to all kinds of birds. So just a little way to recycle your pumpkins is leave it out for your wild pals.
You heard Leslie. Recycle those pumpkins and feed the critters. It was a real delight. A real delight. To meet her for the first time, on the phone at least. We've been talking by email for a couple of years. Only because I was such a fan, and I reached out. And she's been very, very kind, and she is definitely a steward of the Catskills in every sense. I'll post our full conversation in the show notes. Read her book, The Quarry Fox, and her new essay, The Bluebird Chronicles, A Catskills Love Story, will be featured in the December issue of Appalachia Journal. Wrapping up our theme here. That was from the album Green, released in 1986 by Hiroshi Yoshimura. The song is called Feel, again from the album Green. Today we heard green, we had blue, Catskills, birds, bluebirds, turkeys, and the wonderful Leslie Sharp.
Gentlemen,
Duke Ellington and his orchestra live in Manchester, England, back in 1969. The song, Rockin' in Rhythm. Speaking of piano, how about some Prince? Make sure to listen for the foot stomps. It's Prince building to his own theme.
Is that my echo? Give me the straighter one. Turn the lights down so many.
Good God. Your phone, main check, knowing that you probably weren't alone.
Turn the voice down a little.
Wanna call you every day, beg you to be near me. I know your head is underwater. I doubt that you could hear me. Let the rain come down. Rain come down, let the rain come down, down. Let the rain come down, rain come down, let the rain come down, down. Long nights, may drag, no way. nails tight. I wanna call you every day, beg you to be near me. I know your head is underwater, I doubt that you could hear me. Let the rain come down, rain come down, the rain come down, down.
That's what they call a work tape. I was so excited to hear Prince that I left my mic open, so you may have heard my own foot stomping. But that's not the worst thing. I hope I didn't yip or sing. So we have just time for a quick walk. But before we do, that was Prince from 1983, from one of these recently released albums from the archives, Piano and a Microphone. The song was 17. Let's take a quick walk. This is Me in the Woods. With the leaves and the trees. Thank you so much for listening today. If you go to the show notes on WGXC on the website, you can get a link to the full Leslie Sharp interview. You can also find a link to my weekly Ginger newsletter. And I will, of course, list all the songs, the tracks, the albums, the artists, so that you can go find them for yourselves. Have a wonderful day. I'll see you in 2 weeks.